So, and I'm very happy to welcome Bert Hubert. He's gonna tell us about DNA today. And actually, he has a history of telling us about DNA. He was here at SHA 2017 with not one, but two talks, because the subject matter was just that big. Then he was again here at MCH with again a talk about DNA. They were very detailed, very good. I encourage you to look them up, maybe rewatch them at MediaCCC.de. Very nice. And today he's gonna tell us about everything that has happened since then, all the new things that are, well, about how digital is DNA. Thank you. Please welcome Bert.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So thank you so much for showing up again for a talk about molecular biology. And I'm so happy that it excites you all, and I hope that I can make you about half as happy with this stuff as I am, which would already be a lot. The QR code, which repeats at the end, gives you a PDF version of the presentation that lacks the cool animations, but does have lots of extra links to proof and articles and earlier presentations. So I very much encourage you to scan this, and it repeats at the end. It even repeats on the next page. And because I need to credit a few people, I'm leaning a lot on the Wikipedia comments. I'm trying to credit as much as possible where the pictures come from, but the ultimate attribution can be found in the PDF. So, who am I? That does not matter that much who I am, but it is important to note that I did not start life as a biologist, and I started life as a failed physicist, and then a failed startup. But eventually things worked out, and then I regained my interest in DNA. Now, am I a real scientist? Because I don't want to tell you cool stories that are not true. I want to tell you cool stories that are true. Maybe I'm a scientist, maybe not, but I managed to fool not one, but two Nature journals into publishing my data. So, I try to keep it all honest, but I think I'm somewhat of a biologist now. Why is this all so cool? We have our own technology. We have our 3D printers, we have our power generators, we have our silly computers. And in life and in nature, we also find technology. Like our heart is a pump, kidneys are a filter. This is well known. And actually, someone who designs pumps for a living would look at your heart and say, well, it's a clever pump. But it was not invented by us. It's invented by nature. And it turns out that within biology, there is actually an enormous amount of cool stuff within nature, within biology, that is actually technology. But if you study biology at school, they don't sell it to you. They say you must memorize the five different kinds of muscle fiber. And I'm here to tell you that it is exciting as fuck. Now, I showed this spaceship. Let's say this spaceship lands in your garden. And the first thing I would like to know is not what are these aliens doing here. I want to know, how does it work? And is the computer big endian? These are the things we need to know. And this is the possibility that we have with life. We can investigate, we can look at DNA and see, hey, how did you solve your information storage problem? And that's what I'm going to talk about. Again, I mentioned the word spaceship. There are some people that think that DNA is some kind of alien technology, and I'm not here to claim that. However, I would not be surprised. These are the four things we're going to talk about. We only have 25 minutes, so I'm trying to... And usually I overwhelm people with far too much stuff, and I've put myself on a sort of information diet. First, I want to reiterate DNA a bit. Millions and billions of nucleotides or bases, and we call these A, C, G, and T. And the origin of these letters is interesting. For example, the G comes from the word for bat shit. It's good to know. And these information is stored in chromosomes and in genes. But the coolest thing is, as far as we can tell, all of life on Earth uses atom for atom the same DNA. Which means that if you would dig up a life form frozen a billion years ago, its DNA would still work. It would still be compatible with life. You would have to cool it at temperatures that were not available a billion years ago. But the concept is the same. All of life, every virus, every plant, every animal, even us, uses exactly the same DNA. That's sort of interesting, because if you gave me a DVD disc right now, 10 years ago I could play that. Now I can no longer play that because I don't have a machine that can do it. Apparently nature stuck to the same stuff for billions of years. How many billions of years? We can actually tell. And the first signs of life were 4 billion years ago. That's a long time. And really big, and it started out, and that's a bit of a problem, it started out with two forms of life. So as far as we know, when life started on Earth, there were already two kinds of bacteria that had nothing to do with each other. That's weird, to say the least. And there's a lot of investigations going on to see how that could be, because it appears that life sort of started twice. It's weird. And then 2 billion years ago, these two bacteria became like became very close to each other, like really close. One of them ate the other, and that combination became us, which is also rather weird. But anyhow, that's how it is. So I have a digital talk doing here, and my claim, and it's no longer really controversial, is that we have these A, C, G, and T things, and you could might as well just regard them as binary values. And I just made up these numbers. But sometimes people are like, you cannot just assign bits to these molecules, Bert. That's not how it works. And I'd like to remind these people that our computer does not process bits as sort of pure mathematical concepts. Our computer processes volts, or currents, or charges, or magnetic patterns. And all of these, we say, well, these are true bits. These are true ones and zeros. And apparently DNA, I claim, is also two bits, because we have four different kinds, two bits per letter. And by now, everyone agrees with this. In 2017, it was a bit, but now it's quite clear. This is what it looks like. If you look really carefully, we can look at DNA. And the best way to visualize it and understand it is that DNA is like a magnetic tape. So it's not like a disk, it's not like RAM, it's just magnetic tape without addressing on it. So you cannot say, I want to go to byte 2 million on DNA. No, there's no number on there. It's just a piece of tape, and you can start reading anywhere. And you can also read it in the other direction, which is a lot of a unique thing. And but DNA has no addressing, but it's like really good at looking up things. So that does help. Framing is an interesting thing. We know this in technology, where does a byte begin, where does it end? And in our technology, we put some very strong markers there. It says 8 bits, 1 byte. And biology did not put those markers there, so you can get the framing wrong. And that offers challenges and possibilities. So, this is a big, scary virus, hepatitis B, and this is actually what it looks like. And in there is the DNA, and this virus can give you like diarrhea, which we heard a lot about yesterday, and it can really, really ruin your holiday. And here it is. This is the exact source code of hepatitis B. I could mail this to a laboratory right now. They would mail me back a test tube filled with DNA, and I could make this come to life. Which is you can look at it without becoming ill. That's the good news. I mean, it doesn't go through your eyeballs, but this is the actual complete and total source code of hepatitis B. But it's safe, okay. And this is a bacterium, and it's maybe good to have a brief look at this. Oh, interesting, this hepatitis B was 800 bytes. That's an impressive shell code, because it can like ruin your day and week. This is a bacterium, and it does 750 kilobytes, which is a number that we, as technology people, have a sort of a feeling with. Like, well, you could program a nice arcade game in 750 kilobytes in the 1980s. Right now, this doesn't get you beyond NPM install. But these guys, these bacteria, are like really good. They waste no DNA, nothing at all. And apparently, you can get a whole working bacterium for 750 kilobytes. And actually, bacteria are quite simple. You can see the squirrely bit up there. That's actually the DNA. It just lies in there. So bacteria are just very simple. If you want to do something with the DNA in a bacterium, well, there you go. Human beings are a bit more difficult in general. So, this is an interesting one. This is the pufferfish, well known from OpenBSD, and it has the smallest genome of all animals. And I like to think that this is no coincidence, because the OpenBSD people chose well. And but next up, we get human beings. We have 750 megabytes of DNA. Is that a lot? Is that a little? I don't know. I mean, it's smaller than the tiniest updates from any game that you download. Actually, most of the 750 megabytes does not appear to be really doing anything. But maybe it does. But anyhow, you can get a whole human being in there. The interesting thing is, if you would define a sort of standard human being, and you would make a diff from your own DNA compared to the standard human being, you would get a diff file of maybe 1 or 10 megabytes. So your whole identity is actually sort of between 1 and 10 megabytes. That's you. There are some more interesting developments, which I don't have time for that, but there are some people that actually have a lot more genes than other people. You wouldn't know, but it's not always good news. So this is where it gets ridiculous. 750 megabytes for a human being. This is a plant, 37.5 gigabytes. It's not even a very impressive plant. I mean, it does not play chess, doesn't shitpost. And if you look at the DNA of these plants, and this fish did the same thing, you find that over the millions of years, at one point, the plant said, what if I have my DNA, but then twice? Aha. And it did that a number of times. And now it has a genome that is so large that we cannot process it. We can weigh it. 1 gigabase of DNS is 1 picogram. It's one of these lucky coincidences in life. And that's the only way we can actually measure this. It might be that this plant gains a sort of immunity from viruses because most of its DNA does nothing. But we don't really know. There are hints that this fish is actually 2 fishes. But even if it is 2 fishes, it's still a lot of DNA per fish. So here we sort of, from between here and here, we cross the idiotic barrier where the DNA mostly becomes overcomplicated nonsense, like any large software project after a while. But is life really digital? Because I'd be talking about megabytes and gigabytes, but the real proof, of course, is can you recreate life in the lab? If you could do that, you would say life is actually digital. Now, the spoiler is we cannot quite do that yet, but almost. This is what they did. This is 10 years old news, but it's like really cool. First, lower left, you take a bacterium with the DNA in there. Then you take out the DNA, which we can do. We have stuff that dissolves DNA, and then you have an empty bacterium. There's no DNA in there anymore. Then people in the lab designed a whole genome from scratch. And they call that Mycosamus Laboratorium. It's a fun thing. And these people are rather ego-driven, so not only did they create a functioning genome, they also put their own names in there, in the DNA. And some of these people are like that. And so they designed that on the computer, then they spent an awful amount of money turning that computer data into actual DNA again. We can do that for small amounts of DNA, but it's rather expensive. It costs like whole euros per DNA letter, which could add up if you would do that fish. But here it was not that expensive. And then they rebuilt, so they designed the genome, spent a lot of money, spent person years in the lab, and then they had a new chromosome built from scratch. And then they injected that into that empty bacterium that they had kept around. And they made sure that it was a sort of very different kind of bacterium so that they would be sure that when it came to life, that it would do recognizably different things. And they did it, and they bricked it. It didn't work. The bacterium did not boot. And that's what makes this story interesting, because actually no biologist was surprised that this would work. Because we know that DNA is digital, and we know that if you put different DNA in a bacterium, that it will work. Except that these people tried it from scratch, and the first thing they noticed is that, well, actually, the empty bacterium that they used turned out to have a powerful antivirus mechanism built in. And they put in the new DNA, and the empty bacterium said, no, you don't, and killed it. Okay, now no one knew about this bacterial defense mechanism, so they also took that out, put DNA back in, still nothing worked. And they were like, well, yeah, but it's dead. And they started looking, and they found out that during the creation of this whole new chromosome, they had missed one letter. And what happens then is you get a frame shift. It's like taking out two bits out of a bit stream, and then all the other bytes are fucked. And, well, then they fixed that, and then the bacterium came to life. Not very enthusiastically, but it actually started duplicating itself and living, and in which they proved that we can actually, if you start with a sort of an empty shell of a bacterium, then we can reboot one from scratch, which is neat, especially if you just first brick it a few times. This is always very educational. Now, I need to warn you a bit. Behold, the source of all life, and you, and me, by the way. Oh. So, this is a 10 nanometer molecule, or molecule composite, and it forms part of the ribosome, and that's the 3D printer, or actually 1D printer, that prints all of life. Everyone here, as far as I know, came from this machine. And it might sound weird to call it a machine, but it has all the aspects of a machine. I have a movie I will show you later. But it's you should realize all of us came out of this thing. And what comes out? Amino acids. There are 21 amino acids, and you can see this as little Lego blocks. And the ribosome squeezes out these little Lego blocks in a string, a 1D string. But you have to imagine that all these Lego blocks are a little bit magnetic and electrically charged, and the string curls up in an interesting shape. Normally there are 20 amino acids, but there is also a 21st one which they hacked in later. How do you hack in something later? With an escape sequence. So it is actual in DNA. They say, well, these are the normal amino acids we can put in DNA. And here's an extra one for which we have a sort of backslash when we say we want the other ones. Recognizable. So this is the interesting table. And this table says if you take three DNA letters, for example, CCC. Do we have friends from the CCC here? You, yeah. Well, nature agrees with you. Nature says, well, you are a pro. This is how it is. And this table has been universally used by life for the past 2 billion years at least. So every mushroom, which are tremendously weird, and every bacterium and every plant uses this same table. So if you get the three letters DNA, for example, GCC, you always get alanine. And if you get ATG, the three letters, that means end of gene. ATG is nothing else than end of file. And I still find it truly amazing that for no reason I can understand that every bacterium and every mushroom uses this same table. There are actually 20 small differences across life, but they are so small that it's more like, okay, well, that's actually more proof that it's all the same. So what does that look like? We have a whole bunch of DNA on top. It starts with GGG. Which means start of gene, and ends with TGA, which in this case means ends of gene. And then we have to this string, and we have to put the spaces in the right place. And then that converts into those amino acids, the MSA, and then it ends with the end of protein. And then you get this molecule. I have to watch out that I don't, yeah. Not, yeah, it's maybe a bit hard to see because of the, sorry. But there's a molecule on the right, which is exactly shaped, this is the source code of that purple bit in the molecule. Compare that with your 1D printer, a 3D printer at home. So, the movie is not loading. Oh, this was such an awesome movie. Huh? I need to press play. Yeah? I'm on the wrong Wi-Fi here. No, I'm sorry, I'm going to skip the movie. If it even allows me to do that. So, this is an important part of bacteria. You can see on the top right, you see the bacterium, and it has these two swimming tails. And this is how bacteria move around. And this is a complicated machine, which you can see on the left. And this is an electrical motor. It has a stator. It has a rotor. If you are into electrical engines, you will just recognize this machine immediately. It is powered by protons that pass through it. It's interesting. Our motors work with electrons. This one works with protons. But can also work with whole sodium atoms for some reason. And you might think this is a bit of a pixely... We could do with some more pixels here. We cannot get more pixels. These are the molecules. If you zoom in, the molecules only get bigger. So this is a molecular resolution electrical motor which allows bacteria to swim. Now, if we look at a sort of more schematic of it, we see, for example, a part called MOT-A, which is here on the left, and this is the source code of the thing. And I find this a tremendously cool thing that you have a 3D printer, or actually 1D printer, that prints such complicated things at atomic resolution. And I should have shown you the glorious movie, but it's a sight to behold. Well, if you 3D print this model yourself, which you could do, you will find that it's like the resolution is like 10 million times worse than nature's 1D printer. And the one that you printed doesn't actually work. And it looks remarkably silly. So maybe think twice before you do a biology with your 3D printer. So, we need to hurry up a bit. How does life actually control things? Because we've now seen information storage. We have seen how the 3D printer or 1D printer can build these exciting swimming things. But how does it decide when to do that? Well, actually, if you look at DNA, there are all kinds of interesting markers on there, like the TTGACA and the TATAT, which is also called the PrepNow box for some reason. And these are markers that tell the cell you should be turning this DNA into RNA, into proteins. And depending on how these markers are there, that process could go faster or slower. Now, here is a bacterium, E. coli. It's like really cute. Depends on how you, if you feel bad, then you won't like it. It actually needs power to run, and we can measure how much. It's 0.5 picowatts. I mean, if you thought your machine was low power, this is quite something. It runs on glucose. But if there's no glucose, it can convert lactose into glucose, which is nice. But it should only do that if there is a shortage of glucose and if there is lactose. Otherwise, it should not be doing that. That's the algorithm below. And how does it implement that? There are two things to look at. There's a thing called CAP. And if the bacterium runs out of glucose, then it starts producing the CAP molecule as a side product. And that's a signal that says we are out of glucose. This thing, then the CAP, pops on the DNA. It's attracted to the DNA, and it's like a big flag that says, please turn this DNA into proteins, which is nice. But on the other way, it should only do that if there is actually lactose. And there is a repressor thing that attaches to the DNA and that makes sure that the machinery doesn't work. But as soon as there is lactose in the cell, that repressor pops off, and then you have the situation, we have the promoter and we have no repressor, and then the whole thing gets going. And this is actually a small DNA computer program. And bacteria are full of this sort of relatively simple stuff, and in human beings, it's like immensely more complicated. But that's how we are. So I need to round off now, and I need to tell you about this champion, viruses, the ultimate hackers. Well, you would think that this is a sort of artist impression of what a bacterial virus looks like. No, they actually look like this. So you have this thing that sits on a bacterium, and then it goes, and it puts the DNA in there. And because all DNA in the world is compatible with each other, the bacterium goes like, yeah, sure, I'll run your DNA. And that means that it turns itself into a virus machine. And that's not what the bacteria want, because it does not end well when it happens. Now, this is a virus called PhyX174. I have no idea why they gave it such a cool name. It almost sounds like a hacker group, and maybe that's because it is. The smaller the DNA of a virus, the faster it can copy and the less chance that the bacterium has to recognize it. So there's a huge premium on such a virus to be small. And that's a bit like your shell code. If you want to infect something, you do not have that much space. And you have to adhere to certain conventions. And then people studied VIAX and they said, well, it has 5,386 DNA letters. Three DNA letters make one amino acid, which means it has room for 1,795 amino acids. It has 2,334. That's a neat trick. Is there a zip file in there? What did it do? And oh boy. If you look at DNA, I mentioned before about the framing, that you have to group it in these three letters. And this is one part of the VIAX virus. And you notice that it starts with ATG. ATG is the start sign. This is where a new gene starts. Okay? If we now scroll on a bit, you see that over here, it also says ATG in the gene. But you have to sort of start reading in a different frame. And that is what it did. The thing made it possible to stuff two genes into the same bit of DNA. So you can see there, ATG, AG, that is also here. So it took one gene, one function call, and in that same code, but if you read it shifted by one, it becomes a completely different gene. And that is what I call a lead hack. And this is how it looks like. It has overlapping genes. And that is a sort of hacker skill that we can all admire. So give it up for VIAX187. 174. And the wonderful news is it does not infect us, it infects other bacteria. So I need to round off because this is all that we have time for. Tomorrow at 8, there is a presentation for hackers and cryptographers and especially for reverse engineers where we're going to go much more in depth and where you can actually, I hope to urge you to discover some more things. And for people that need even more, Monday, 3 o'clock, we have an overflow session where you can ask all your questions. And here's the promised QR code. And with that, I thank you very much for your attention.